What's going on, everybody? Alan Kenny, managing editor with CrystalBallRun.com, the Blog UN Network's college football blog. And joining me is one of my good friends from the blogosphere, Bill Conley of SBNation.com. We're going to talk about how things are shaking out here with the BCS at the end of the season. So, Bill, what's going on, man?
Not too much. A little busy. A few things going on right now.
Yeah, just a little bit. Hey, so before we get into the BCS stuff, though, initial thoughts on the Big Ten's whole gambit here?
Well, we talked about this yesterday at SBN. I think that the general idea is just that the pool for the Big Ten was not going to be very large, unless you think Texas is one day going to do what, you know, they've been saying for years, and that's, and you know, threaten to go to the Big Ten. And I don't see that happening. If they go anywhere ever, it's going to be the Pac-12, I think. The pool was basically Maryland, Rutgers, Georgia Tech. You know, I've always been holding out for the University of Toronto, you know, something creative. But I think if that's the pool and you know you want to get to 14 or 16 teams eventually, then there's really no need to wait. You know, you might as well get this going. You're going to be renegotiating first tier rights in a couple of years. You have a couple of, you know, this is good because it will prove right or wrong the theory we've had all, you know, that we've been talking about forever about, you know, Rutgers and the New York market or Maryland and the DC market.
Yeah.
We'll find out now how true it is, like how much of, those markets they bring in, you know, it's if they can get on basic cable in DC and New York, you know, despite a lack of overall, you know, Rutgers fan support in the New York area, then it's worth it. And, you know, this was a business decision. And I know a lot of people hate that, but that's the world we live in. It always has been. It's only recently that these conferences have been getting their own networks. And that it's mattered that much, but you know, it's fine. It's obviously not going to improve the product on the field a lot, but I don't think it's going to take away from it a lot either. Maryland could become pretty competent again soon if they can keep a quarterback healthy. Rutgers is already, you know, pretty good. Like not amazing, but pretty good. Yeah. So it's fine. I hate having that opinion. It's neither great nor terrible. It's just, it is.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, no, I completely. I wonder though. I mean, I can't imagine Delaney and the Big Ten are done. I'm assuming they're going to be targeting two more teams from the ACC pretty soon.
I don't know who the other team would be. Like Georgia Tech, obviously we've heard about for a while. But after that, I don't know. They're not going to go after Boston College. Although, if they're going with the basic cable idea, then there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wonder, like, maybe Virginia, maybe, and I can't imagine North Carolina leaving there, but Virginia Tech, I don't know.
I mean, I've been to Virginia's campus a couple of times. It kind of does feel like a Big Ten campus. It would fit the role of the big land grant university and the public institution and academics heavy, et cetera. So maybe that is something, but I don't know. For now, I think they might be happy with 14 for a little while, or, you know, the way these things move, like Monday, we could find out about Virginia and Georgia Tech. Who knows?
Yeah. And then, I mean, of course, Mike's live now probably is got his eyes up there in the ACC country, too. So
we'll figure out. Well, with Slive, we'll figure out, you know, what his plans really are, because, I mean, if the goal really is to eventually get to 16 for them, and they swear it's not.
Yeah.
But if the goal is there, then, I mean, certainly this is the first time the ACC has been a victim in this. We've assumed the ACC would be picked apart eventually, but it never happened. It's always held more clout. And not only did it not lose teams, but they got Notre Dame, sort of, and they got Syracuse and Pitt. So, I mean, this is a big step. And if Slive does have designs on ever trying to get, you know, NC State or Virginia Tech or whoever, then now's exactly the time to do it, because the ACC really is vulnerable now.
Yeah, there are going to be some itchy feet, I got to imagine. So, but let's talk about what's actually happening on the field. You know, these realignment things have the worst timing generally. So, anyway, you know, obviously we're coming down here. The season is winding down. As of right now, I can't see a scenario where if Alabama and Notre Dame went out, they're not going to be the two teams in the BCS National Championship game. Notre Dame makes a pretty obvious choice. They've gone undefeated. They've played a, you know, pretty strong schedule, obviously. What about Alabama, though? I mean, do you think that the Tide are getting a bit of a pass?
Well, I think, I mean, if all we're doing with strength of schedule is looking at who you played and not how you played against them, then maybe Alabama is getting a little too much credit. You know, at Football Outsiders, I do a bunch of the rankings and stuff for Football Outsiders, and I mean, they've been off the charts. Even with the Texas A&M loss, they are far and away the number one team. And they are that way because, you know, my theory has always been, you know, it's one thing who you play, but it's another how you play against them. And you can prove yourself against any team in the country. If you play a terrible team, but you beat them three times worse than everybody else, that still says you're three times better than a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. So the way Alabama handled Mississippi State and the way they handled, you know, Arkansas was handicapped a little bit, but Michigan, Missouri, Tennessee, it's not just that they beat those teams, it's that they destroyed those teams. Yeah. And that proves a lot to me. I think in terms of, you know, if we're using, you know, transitive property and all that, and just trying to figure out who you played, then, you know, maybe they're a little bit lacking, but how they've played, I think they're far and away the best team in the country still.
Yeah, I mean, I'd certainly favor them over any team in the country without a doubt. And, you know, they've been having that kind of year. It's just, you know, then you start looking at the schedule. I wonder, too, also, I mean, obviously we've seen, looking at the top 10, top, you know, 25 in the BCS, are we giving the SEC maybe a little bit too much credit?
I think they've rigged the system here.
Yeah.
With the way the scheduling has fallen out, like Georgia's not the third best team in the country, Florida's not the fourth best team in the country, but they've, you know, won all but one of their games, and you know, they just they do get credit for the fact that they win when everybody else doesn't. But no, I think, you know, the SEC is the best country or conference in the country, but it's not good enough to have three of the four top teams in the BCS standings, and then another at seventh, another at ninth, another at 12th. They're not that good. But, I mean, it is the best conference in the country still, and I think, especially with the year A&M's having, it's certainly, we've talked about the SEC being top-heavy in the past, especially last year with Alabama and LSU and really nobody else deserving of number three. This year, that's a different story. I think Alabama's far and away number one, but then you've got you know, 2 through 7 or 8 is a lot stronger, I think, than it was last year.
Yeah, yeah. Then that seems though like the bottom half from 8 to 14 or what have you is just really not, really weak though.
Yeah, not very good now.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. So you mentioned Texas A&M. Obviously, they've been a huge story this year, and I'm sure that looking there at your numbers there at Football Outsiders, I mean, this is a team that has is one of the best in the country, I think. But you know, I look at this team last year, and that team was actually pretty good then, too. Just, you know, kind of the victim of a lot of, well, I mean, mentally, obviously, they fell apart a few times. But, I mean, but in terms of the quality of play on the field, they actually weren't that bad. I mean, they were pretty good. So what do you think is the difference in this team this year?
Well, I think, you know, this was a perfect time for a coaching change because, yeah, with the Football Outsiders rankings last year, they were a top 15 team. You know, they for 3.5 quarters a game, they
yeah.
were really, really good. It's just they got really unlucky with fumbles. You know, opponents recovered a very high percentage of fumbles. They got really unlucky with, you know, interceptions that maybe should have just been passes broken up but landed in defenders' hands and stayed
yeah.
there. They were really unlucky with turnovers, and then they clammed up. I mean, all the numbers in the world that are great, but you still can watch a team clam up. Like, once they've clammed up before, they're probably going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the problem with A&M. They lost confidence. They lost swagger. But, you know, in that sense, Kevin Sumlin was the perfect hire. We always talk about guys, you know, the coaches, the way they carry themselves and confidence, you know, John Gruden type things.
Mm-hmm.
But that... The swagger factor doesn't matter unless you've got a lot of talent and a lot of just depth and speed and everything else. And then maybe swagger matters. But A&M has that. You know, they had it last year, and they've got a lot of team speed. And now they've got a quarterback who is crazy, and the things he does shouldn't work, but they do. And so when you combine, you know, the addition of Manziel with Sumlin, I think that has improved them by about 10 spots, and it's helping them close games. They just have a lot more confidence than they did last year down the stretch.
Yeah, and have we finally dispelled this whole idea about the spread and the SEC?
I mean, Lord, I would hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, it was silly to begin with just because you know, of Florida's success with Urban Meyer, of Auburn's success with, well, not with Gene Chizik, but with Gus Malzahn as offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I think the issue has always been, like, if you have the talent to do it, you can run any offense. And you just have to have the right personnel in place. And so A&M, you know, it's going to be interesting for them next year, because this was kind of a perfect storm. Like, Manziel caught everybody by surprise, and they have one of the best offensive lines in the country. And they've got Swope and Kristen Michael to kind of to right the ship. Obviously, Molina is getting a lot more carries than Michael is, but they've got a lot of seniors. And if those two tackles leave next year for the pros, and they both, I think last I saw, were projected potentially first round, so they really might. This is one of those where we could be talking about a sophomore slump for Manziel, and it really doesn't have much to do with Manziel so much as the talent around him has dissipated a little bit. But this year, it has shown, yeah, with a good system and a good quarterback and a good offensive line, hey, you know, go figure, you can actually move the ball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, it was always just a matter of how efficient you were at moving the ball, as opposed to, you know, what kind of how you were doing it. But
right.
Who's the Kansas State this year for you? You know, it's that team that you can't explain why, but they're still winning a bunch of games.
Oh, Notre Dame.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
this a team that beats Purdue by 3 points at home, beats BYU by 3 points at home, needs overtime to beat Stanford, and then needs 3 overtimes to beat Pitt. That's not the number one team in the country. But as long as you keep winning, then you're going to be ranked number one. And it's kind of, you know, Auburn did the same thing a couple years ago. They won like, what, 10 games by a touchdown or less, or 8 or 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And they just kept doing it. But they did it against a much better set of opponents. What's funny with Notre Dame is I thought they would be, in my preview over the summer, I said they would be a lot better than people expected, but that their schedule would hold them back. Their schedule isn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. Michigan State's not nearly as good. Michigan's good, but not great. And so they've taken advantage. They've played up in their biggest moments, like Oklahoma. That was staggering what they did in the fourth quarter in Norman.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly looked great against Wake Forest last week. That's another case where, you know, it doesn't matter who you play, but you can prove a lot. And they crushed Wake Forest. But some of the games they've barely won just don't make any sense. And they have won them. They've played really well the last couple of weeks. So maybe they've built off of that, like Auburn did kind of in 2010. But yeah, they're absolutely this year's K-State for me.
All right. How about a team that's worse, at least record-wise, than its actual level of play?
I think, you know, usually I lean on the rankings for that, the Football Outsiders rankings. The highest-ranked team with an iffy record, like one of them, strangely enough, is BYU, which kind of confuses me.
Yeah.
Michigan State. I think we've seen a lot more teams than normal this year. Maybe it's just my imagination. A lot more teams than normal that are really good on one side of the ball, but just not even average on the other. And that's been the case with both BYU and Michigan State. Their defenses are fantastic,
mm-hmm.
But their offense is just, you know, hasn't even been able to just get out of the way.
Yeah.
Michigan State really does confuse me, though, because they do have, I mean, they don't have a lot of explosiveness at all, but they've got an identity on offense. They've got just, you know, big Le'Veon Bell, big Deion Sims. They would seem to have enough punishing factors on offense that they can win a lot of games with a top five defense, and they just haven't. They've lost close games. They've lost games that I really kind of assumed they would win.
Mm-hmm.
Ignoring BYU's statistical oddities right now, I'd say Michigan State's probably the team that surprises me the most.
Yeah, that I know that was a team that a lot of people had high hopes for going into the season, even with the quarterback change, for the exact reasons that you mentioned. I mean, their style is so ground heavy, and you know they really are a really good team defensively. That's definitely a head scratcher for me too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, they lost by 3 at home to Northwestern. They lost by 4 to Nebraska, you know, 2 to Michigan, 3 to Iowa. They've really been unlucky. And 1 to Ohio State, come to think of it. So
yeah.
That's 5 really close losses in the last 2 months. So they've been really close to a different team that they just haven't figured out how to pull games out. And at home, even. They lost to Iowa at home.
Yeah, oh, I know. It was definitely a head scratcher. And so we've got a big weekend coming up, obviously, some of these games. I mean, you know, USC, Notre Dame. There's Bedlam, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Florida, Florida State. Looking across the country, give me your most likely upset this weekend that'll shake things up.
My first impression was Nebraska-Iowa, but that was a couple of weeks ago. And since then, I think Nebraska has proven a lot more to me, and Iowa has proven proven a lot more to me in a different way.
Yeah.
So I don't really see that one happening anymore. You have to look at USC. I mean, I've been saying since like November 1st this year that, you know, every year on November 1st, we enter with 100 questions and all these BCS chaos scenarios. And then about 97 of November just takes care of about 97 of them. So I'm curious about Notre Dame USC. Obviously, Matt Barkley's not playing, but I mean, that's always a long road trip for Notre Dame. And again, November, if Notre Dame really isn't deserving of a spot in the national title game, November will take care of it. And that could be just in the form of they lay an egg, but they do it against a team better than Purdue, and they can't recover from it. So, I mean, that's a really interesting game for me. But then a lot of the other ones, I don't see Georgia Tech beating Georgia. I don't see Auburn coming anywhere close to Alabama. And so in terms of upsets, a lot of these games are either so widespread like that, or they're really close like OU, OSU, or South Carolina, Clemson, that I really don't know. A lot of those are toss-ups to me, but I would say Notre Dame USC would be the biggest potential upset.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting one. But you know, I think that you know, redshirt freshman going up against that Notre Dame front is you know, that's certainly a tough one. But yeah, they absolutely have the talent.
If USC wins, it'll be because their defense really came through. But Golson is looking a lot better. I will say that. You know, that's another reason Notre Dame has been so weird this year. You don't easily get away with playing a closer, like bringing it at different.
Yeah.
To close games, that's not supposed to work.
But
the Irish, aside from Pitt, have certainly played better over this last month and a half.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Bill, I've taken up a lot of your time on an early Tuesday morning, so I don't want to take up any more, but I really appreciate it. You coming on, always enjoy talking with you, Bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All right, and thank you all too for joining us for crystalballrun.com. I'm Alan Kenny.